This podcast is sponsored by AAA, the American Automobile Association. AAA members get discounts on tickets, resort accommodations, and more at Walt Disney World and other Orlando attractions. If you book a qualifying Walt Disney World Resort vacation package at select AAA offices, you'll receive a free subscription to touringplans.com, as well as dedicated trip planning resources just for AAA clients. Go to AAA.com or ask your local AAA travel agent for more details on this offer. Hello, it's Len Testa. This is another edition of the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. And today we're at the Fort Wilderness Campgrounds, one of my favorite places in all of Walt Disney World. And joining me today is the man who, in 1986, was the first person to ever coin the phrase, "Hey, I just met you and this is crazy, but here's my number. So call me maybe." It's Jim Hill. How's it going, Jim?
And Eisner never called.
We just had a lovely breakfast over at Trails End Cafeteria. Mm-hmm. And they,
Buffeteria.
Buffeteria, that's right. It's a buffeteria because they own the trademark on that word. Mm-hmm. But they've changed the menu a little bit. They're going a little more heart-healthy.
It was fruit. We saw actual fruit.
But thankfully, they still preserved the donut bar, the pastry bar. So they've got this is what I love. You can get donuts. Mm-hmm. You can get pancakes. You can get all kinds of pastries with a side of butter on them.
Very crucial. It's My old mother-in-law, she used to butter. I mean, there were people that
just... my butter with a side of margarine.
There we go.
So we're over by, we're starting over by the training post and over by Hoop-Dee-Doo. And one of the things I love about this resort is it looks like it's actually carved out of the wilderness. You've got these huge trees with Spanish moss hanging down on them. I know they're not probably not real logs, but the log cabin look about things. It's all very rustic. Cars are banned from back in this part of the lodge. It's really nice.
No, absolutely. But you're right. This was carved out of the wilderness, and not for a lot of money. That's the other.
Yeah, there's not a lot of infrastructure here. I mean, outside of this particular area that we're at.
Well, never mind the infrastructure. I mean, literally, when they built this started in January of 71. Okay, so resort opened in October. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no money.
So they started construction and finished it in the same year?
Oh, God. You know, well, they opened 6 weeks after the actual opening resort. In fact, it's so funny if you watch the 90-minute NBC special. You know, they have these couple of scenes that they shoot with Jonathan Winters where he's staying at the campground. And the camera angles are chosen so carefully. It's like, all right, here's Jonathan. Here's a canal. A canoe can go in. And, you know, just don't move the camera to the left because, you know, just there's nothing. You know, the first group of 232 campsites were, you know, just carved out of this place with no budget. In fact, the poor vice president who was in charge of this project, I mean, he's actually asked that I not use his name. You know, I had an interview with him once, and he's like, "Look, I'll tell you all these stories, but you can't use my name because we did some really bad things." Mm-hmm. They had no money. I mean, they knew from the Disney's Vacation Land campground next to Disneyland that a campground was an essential element of, you know, the theme parks. And so what they did initially was...
We're walking by the bus stop.
Okay. What they can do is they need a campground. But they wanted the best possible campground. So they turned literally to this longtime employee at Disneyland and said, "Okay, here's a certain amount of money. Here's a trailer. Go for 6 months and visit every national park, every big campground. Take notes." And guy did it. Came back with wonderful ideas.
He came back full of mosquito bites. Like, well, that's, he's coming back from the wilderness.
Okay, so lots of chigger bites. But, you know, he had ideas. Okay. So, but again, the problem was that it really wasn't a priority. The priority was the theme park and the two hotels. In the middle of this, you've got Disney fighting with U.S. Steel. And literally, Dick Nunes looks up at one day and says, "Oh, crap, the campground." It's like, okay.
"Hey, we opened in 9 months. How's that campground coming along?"
It's
fantastic.
Get on a plane, go to Florida, start working at the campground.
Here's your tent.
Yeah.
And so, sort of this, they probably sent in there saying, Where will I be staying? You'll be staying in this tent until the campground is finished, and then you can move into a cabin.
Well, the one thing that worked in his favor is, again, this used to be, this part of the property used to be, you know, places for hunters and fishermen, mm-hmm. and there was one little rustic lodge that he used as sort of his base of operations.
It was already here?
Yep, yeah.
Oh, really?
You know, predated the resort. But again, no money. I mean, literally nothing for a budget, and no supplies, And so he eventually began surreptitiously pulling people off of other projects and built this team of what he referred to as his raiders. And what they would do is they would wait till 5 o'clock at night when everybody would clear off of all the other construction sites, and then they would go and pillage supplies.
You know, has anyone seen my nail gun?
Well, no. Not just nail gun, trucks, lumber. And in fact, at one point,
lumber.
There was this great story about they needed to have an office set up for, operationally. And it was just like, well, look, I know the accountant is based in that trailer. And more to the point, if we take all of his stuff, they're going to have to buy new stuff because he's the accountant. And that's what they did. You know, they literally went into this guy's office, cleared out the desk, the filing cabinets, you know, the stapler. They just placed all of the documents on the floor. I mean, the guy came in the morning like, why me? You know, but everything gone.
Flanagan!
but again, you know, just not really proud of what he did. But again, they
it got done.
It got done. And November 71, this place is open and... Right from the get-go, it's a smash. It's a huge success because, of course, people come, you know, they've camped everywhere in the country, and they come here, and there's the beautiful modern sites that are wide, and they've got the crushed shell base so for good drainage, and, yeah. You know, and it's beautiful weather, and that's when it started to go south, because now you had people coming here, and they love the campground so much, they weren't leaving it.
Have you ever camped here before?
Yeah.
I've camped here as well. Yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic campsite.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
The comfort stations are in, mm-hmm. where you take showers and the bathrooms and everything. Incredibly clean, by any standard.
Well, right from the get-go. I mean, this park opened with three different comfort stations servicing the 232 campsites. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people just... Oh my God! We have showers, Noreen.
And they're nice showers. I mean,
they are.
Yeah.
But again,
the other thing too about the comfort stations, mm-hmm. they're heated and cooled.
Mm-hmm.
So the first couple of times I camped here, mm-hmm. were in December, mm-hmm. when it was really really cold outside, yeah. to the point where, you know, my shampoo was freezing out in the tent and stuff like that. But you get in the comfort station, and everything goes really really well. In fact, we're passing one right now. I mean, it's modern by any.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But
so they get here, right? And then nobody, and everyone wants to stay, and no one wants to leave.
Well, and more to the point, they're not going to the Magic Kingdom, you know. And it's like, again, Disney has paid $400 million to build this brand new resort, and the campground, which people love, they're not leaving. They're not leaving the campground. So, you know, but at the same time, they're operating...
Is this where they introduced the pack of feral wolves to get people off the campsites?
Well, this is when they actually began looking for new ways to monetize. So, for example, this is when the Pioneer Hall initiative goes through. It's like, okay, so let's build a sit-down restaurant. You know, in fact, Trails End, Crockett's Tavern.
It wasn't there for opening?
No, that was actually built up and running finally in 74, but... Before that, you know, as they're bumping out the, and they're building more and more campsites, they added 9 loops and another 600 campsites in year 2, they actually built a rail system. You know, it was kind of steam trains that were modeled after the trains that ran around Hawaiian sugar plantations. Very, very narrow gauge. They had 5 passenger cars and... You know, they only operated for 4 years because Disney really put them in very quickly, didn't do the roadbed stuff. More to the point, they didn't hire professional engineers. They used the kids who operated rides. And, you know, they'd be out roaming around the property, which, by the way, the train route here was twice as long as the route around the Magic Kingdom.
Wow. Okay. I mean, train... So like a 40-minute round trip then.
Yeah, I mean, train buffs would come out here and ride all day, but... you know, the kids were operating, and it's like, oh yeah, coal, you know, and water. That would have been good. So you know, they'd run out.
Steam train without water.
It was like have to send for the truck to bring the water and the coal, or worse.
I didn't know that there's a train system here.
Absolutely. Wow. In fact, what's interesting is a lot of the bike paths and the walking paths here are the old train route.
Really?
Yeah. So, anyway, long story short, you know, that's in place, you know, and of course, you have to pay $1 per day to ride it. So, you know.
Oh, that's how they monetize it.
Yeah. And meanwhile, again, they're looking for ways, you know, to make this place pay for itself. And about that time, you started seeing in the annual reports this sort of mentioned bubbling up of the old swimming hole. And, you know, the notion of, well, what if we created something in kind of the Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn vein, where, you know, you go and there's rope swings and there's, you know, and slides and all that. And this is actually where, you know, River Country bubbled up from. But, again, you got to understand that nobody had done this before.
Nobody had put a water theme park inside of
a campground. And in fact, what was kind of interesting was that when Disney announced that they were going to do this in 72 in the annual report, in 73, somebody had already gotten the jump on them and built a Wet n' Wild in downtown Orlando. It's like, oh, water park, that's a great idea. You know, so, you know, this happens to Disney a lot. They'll announce things and someone will go, that is a terrific idea. I will do that.
I will do that at one-tenth of the scale, at one-tenth of the price, at one-tenth of the quality, but still, get it out there.
Well, anyway, so River Country bubbles along development-wise, but first project is Pioneer Hall. And you're right. I mean, they brought in the people to build the authentic log-looking building. But here's the interesting thing, that initially, the space inside of it where the Hoop de Doo show was presented, the initial plan was, we're going to do nature talks in there.
Nature talks?
I'm serious. In fact, if you...
Oh, well, yeah, okay, so you got to think, the early 70s, there's a lot of interest in ecology and the environment and stuff. Earth Day started in around that time. I kind of, sort of, if I can squint in my mind's eye, see it.
But Len, I mean, if you look at the literature, they actually would hand you, as you came in, you had the option of taking the 2-hour-long nature walk or the 5-hour-long nature walk.
People were healthier back then, Jim.
I'm sorry. Even the alligator's like, haven't I seen you before? You've been by here 5 times. We at least throw somebody in. I'm starving.
Starving.
In fact, we were talking about this over breakfast, that you build a theme park, you build something like this, you open it, and you only find out 6 months in what people want.
Yeah, so we were talking about this over breakfast. It's when you're designing something, whether it's an attraction or a land or a park or a resort, there's how you think people will use it in the plan, and then what actually happens once you release it and people actually start using it. And they're two completely different things sometimes.
No, absolutely. So anyway, again, so the nature talk thing kind of peters out immediately. But they have this hall, and they have
this...
And
it's pretty big. I mean,
it's huge space. And so, but at the same time, Disney has started this early adjunct of the college program. In fact, it's called the Great American Musical Comedy Program.
The Great American Musical Comedy
Program. I mean, literally, college students were going to come to Disney World, and it was, you know, you would, you know, perform at parades, you'd do stage shows, you know, but it was a summer internship, and then you'd go back, and I have been to Disney. I've learned how to perform. And
okay. We'll kind of see it.
So a gentleman called Gary Goddard that's associated with the program. And they come in and they look at the stage, and it's like, well, you know, kind of looks sort of like what they do with the Golden Horseshoe. I mean, maybe we could do some kind of stage show in here. And, you know, over fits and starts. And again, just using college kids.
Did they have a kitchen at the time? Was it a dinner show or was it a stage show?
It was more of a stage show. I mean, obviously they had the kitchen because, you know, the Crockett's Tavern and that sort of stuff was in place. Okay. But not nearly. I mean, you know, they serve 800 pounds of ribs a night in there. So, you know, when it finally got going, they had to get a formal kitchen built. But anyway, they literally cobbled together the hoop-de-doo. And again, you got to understand, this is college kids who are performing it. So in the original version of this show, they are jumping off the balcony onto the stage.
Really?
I mean, this whole idea of coming through the audience, you know, as they enter. I mean, it's just college kids. It's like we're, you know, being goofy and, you know, kind of enjoying this. And so they open. And the first night, they're able to fill three tables worth of people.
Three tables.
Yeah, and it's just like everyone's like, oh, this isn't going to last.
Yeah.
But the crew that was in it believed so strongly in it, they printed up flyers with their own money and went around not only to the Disney hotels here on property, but out on 192. And so 2 weeks in, they're filling 10 tables. And by the end of the summer, they're filling two shows a night. But it's a
really?
College program.
Oh, so there's no permanent staff. There's
so,
no...
So
who wrote the script?
Gary did a lot of the work. In fact, okay. You know, Gary's going to be a big part of the next level of expansion for this resort because... This was considered such a success. In fact, Gary was the one that Disney management turned to and said, you know, these kids are going home in September. You need to hire us some professional actors. And so, you know, starting in September, they literally had pros in here doing this thing. Anyway, so this is a smash, you know, and it's bringing people in at a time when the resort is really quiet. And meanwhile, the River Country country is chugging along. And they're looking, you know, we'd really... And each year they're adding another bunch of loops of campgrounds, and it's like...
Yeah, I mean, it's expanding. This place is huge,
by
the
way. It is.
We've just walked one entire loop, the 200 loop, and we're heading back towards the training post. We're going to find the walking trail.
Yep.
But you could... I mean, I've jogged this before. You could easily do a 3-mile jog and never leave this resort. And you could probably do 5, actually.
And more to the point, it's so quiet. It's so peaceful, with the possible exception of the bus noise.
So when I've camped here, I've stayed both in cabins and I've stayed in tents, and yeah, at night it's I mean it's, you know, crickets and whatever other nature roams around at night that it's a little too scary for me, so I just keep the tent zipped up. But no, the interesting thing is until about 6 o'clock in the morning, you have no idea whether you're somewhere in the Smoky Mountains or you're in Walt Disney World, you know, other than the comfort stations or everything. But at 6 o'clock, I found, and I don't know if you know this, Jim, at 6 o'clock is when they start the steamboats. So at 6 o'clock, you hear...
Well, that's so funny you say that, because that distance. Was another thing that kind of killed the train. It started operating at 7, and imagine... And these things were literally built right next to the campground. So
yeah.
It's like, dah, 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 woo! It's like, okay... Thank you.
So. It's a little early for that.
That's right. So.
The other thing that I found that was different about camping, or that I didn't realize in camping, was that people who are, you know, come in, they have these huge RVs, right? Some of these are like, you know, 40, 50 feet long. Mm-hmm. And Disney's expanded the size of the sites that can handle them. Mm-hmm. But what you don't realize is that these RVs have, you know, they have full kitchens. They have, so we passed one guy, he literally has a satellite dish. On it, but these. I'm waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, it's cold. It's December. I've been woken up by a steam engine, and I can smell someone cooking bacon. You know, and I've got my granola bar, and it's 40 degrees outside, and all I can smell is the bacon. And you know, it gets in your nose, and then it gets in your sinuses, and pretty much that's all you can think of. Yeah. It was great. So. Anyway, yeah, but I love. Oh, so we're walking by the Tricircle D Farm. When did they add the farm?
Well, the farm came in the early 70s, again, artificially creating an attraction for the park, or, you know, for Fort Wilderness, because obviously you needed a place to keep all of the horses that were on, that worked in the park. In fact, if you look to the back there, you can see the Percherons that, you know, pull the trolley cars.
Oh, on Main Street?
Yeah.
Huh.
But again, it's just, you take a back of the house area and turn it into an attraction.
Yeah, and so we can actually see the ponies here.
Yep.
And some of the horses, yeah. They're very small.
Well, you know.
Some of the larger ones are back there.
Yeah, again, tiny horses, little carriages.
It's nice.
But, again, you know, so jumping back to the Gary Goddard story, you had, so Gary had this huge success out of the box, and, you know, Imagineering notices, and they invite him in. And one of the first things
No,
again, college program, just a kid.
Okay, okay.
Who had proved himself in the college program. And so, you know, they invite him in, and first thing they do is say, hey, you know, we're looking at really expanding Fort Wilderness, because it's, you know, it's a huge success, but, you know, again, we're only making $11 per campsite. and we'd really like to, you know, get some significant money coming in. And Gary kind of floats the idea, well, you know, I mean, we're turning the people away left and right for Hoop-De-Doo each night, and maybe we should think about doing a bigger show. And Gary came up with this really interesting idea of literally creating a Western Street.
A Western Street?
That would extend out from Pioneer Hall.
Okay.
And, you know, the idea is that one side of the street, you know, again, it's facades that have literally like window shades, you know, okay, that would roll up at showtime. And the other side of the street
that's clever
is in a 1,000-seat steakhouse. And so you sit there and, you know, you're eating your dinner. And as opposed to at Pioneer Hall where you hear the stagecoach roll up.
Yeah.
In this stage show, every night, these 1,000 people, the stagecoach pulled by 6 horses would roll into town. And the cast would get out and perform. And there'd be gunfights. And they, you know, I mean, this spectacular show that, and again, Disney being clever and more to the point, Gary being clever, the way they were going to monetize it is the rooms that were on the second floor would be hotel rooms.
Oh, genius.
So, you know, this was going to be Wilderness Junction and just extend out from here. And everyone was excited. Everyone thought it was a great idea. And then Epcot came around. And it was just, you know, Disney was feeling increasing pressure from the Florida legislature, but you did say something about a city, you know, and employing a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so Disney eventually is like, okay, that's got to be the priority, and let's go with that. And so, you know, Wilderness Junction got tabled for a while. So,
all right, so they table it, but is the idea dead at this point? This is what, like the late 70s, early 80s?
This is mid to late 70s at this point. I mean, the belief was that once they got, you know, Epcot up out of the ground,
they're done with theme parks at that point.
Well, more to the point, they figured, okay, we're going to need more, you know, once we get our second gate open, we're going to need increased capacity. So it's like, hold that for a while. And, okay, and speaking of holding ideas, in fact, if you look at aerial photos of the Walt Disney World property in late 71, mm-hmm, you can actually see in the spot where Fort Wilderness was built, they literally cleared the spot out. This was going to be, you know, one of their major resorts at one point in the future. But it just, you know, again, it's like the Asia Hotel, like the Persian, and, you know, what is it? Not the Mediterranean, the Venetian. Sorry. It's like, okay, future. That's going to be a future, but let's at least clear the site and be ready for it. And at that point, the notion was that it was going to be Cypress Point. It was going to be, you know, a relatively small-scale hotel. And it was only going to be
Cypress Point.
Cypress Point.
Okay. After the kinds of trees that are
that
dominant.
Exactly. Okay. All right, so you had 550-room hotel, and
That's actually a little bit smaller than the Polynesian, right?
Yep.
The Polynesian right now has, what, 700-800 rooms, something
yep.
like that?
And
might have fewer than that, actually.
But the other gimmick of it was that it was going to have 50 log cabins out in, you know, along the water, you know, sort of honeymoon cottages, that sort of thing.
Hmm.
It was, you know, a fairly clever idea.
And where was this going to be built?
Well, right where Wilderness Lodge is built now. But, see, this is where it gets interesting, all right? You know, everyone assumes, you know, when they saw the Grand Floridian built, you know, or put into production as soon as Michael Eisner walked in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise, Wilderness Lodge, that, well, these are Eisner area ideas. And it's like, no, actually,
this is 10 years old.
Well, more to the point, as late as 1982, 2 years before Eisner came in the door and took over, Dick Nunes, in an interview in the Eyes and Ears, the Disney World newspaper, was talking about, okay, we're looking at post Epcot, and we're looking at ramping up our resorts.
So Epcot opens in
October of 82.
82.
But, you know, so here they are literally in the weeks leading up to it, and they're assuming that it's going to be this huge success.
Right.
So it's like, all right, so
what next?
You know,
that's
like,
interesting.
So it's like, we're looking at doing our Mediterranean hotel, actually finally building something on the same side of the Venetian. We're going to go forward with a Grand Floridian that will be dropped where the Asian was. I mean, again, the interesting thing is, they're using sites that they had designated with the initial, expansion plan or
right.
phase one, but
changing the theming,
different theming, and
what made them go Grand Floridian to, Asian to Grand Floridian?
Well,
somebody's vacation at the Coronado in off of San Diego.
Well, it was actually more to the point of, face it, the Grand Floridian harkens back to the 20s,
the Flagler era of railroad expansion.
That's exactly, and the belief was that, it's our Florida resort, let's give people, the grand hotel they're looking for.
Yeah.
But more to the point, the other thing, frankly, is when they did the market research,
mm-hmm.
They noticed that, they weren't, in fact, this kind of touches on something we'll be talking about when we get to the water parks today, but, the original plan for the water parks for Blizzard Beach was it wasn't just a winter-themed, water park adjacent, with a miniature golf course adjacent that carried mm-hmm. it on theme. There was literally going to be, across the street from it, an alpine-themed hotel that had, and a convention hotel, mind you, that was going to have the exact same thing, and it just sort of covered with snow, and this is where it gets kind of funny, but, so they reach out to all the convention groups that have previously come to Disney and have expressed an interest in coming back at some point.
So they're doing some market research, a survey.
Right, and say, hey, we're going to build a winter-themed hotel, and it's going to have a convention center, and won't you want to hold the convention there? And it's like, excuse me, have you noticed our company is based in the Northeast? And, one of the ways we actually get our employees to go to the conventions is, hey, we're getting you out of the snow and we're taking you to Florida.
Here, stay at the ski lodge.
it's like, sorry.
Good point.
So that's, literally.
That's what happens when you're a California-based company.
No, that's it exactly.
Snow is fascinating, isn't it? Yeah. You're from New Hampshire. Tell me, Jim. Snow is fascinating.
So that's, when you take a look at the Coronado now, you realize they buried the needle in the exact opposite direction.
What would Mars be like?
Mexico, South America, heat, hot.
A Peruvian hotel coming up.
Okay, that will go too. That's literally how that happened. But again, in regard to the market research on both the Venetian and the Asian hotel, it was just the notion of the Asian people kind of looked at and said, well, that's interesting. And the fact that also, frankly, the way that hotel was designed, it was only going to have 500 rooms. It was a little, tight, small hotel.
Yeah.
And just with a very sort of stark style. They're like, let's go with something a little more welcoming. Let's go with something a little more historical tie to Florida, the Grand Floridian.
Nice. So we're still walking, by the way. We're walking now from Fort Wilderness over to the Wilderness Lodge. And we're on the jogging/walking path. Between these two. Have you ever walked this before? This is my first time on this path.
I have to admit, I think the last time I did this, my daughter was in a stroller. this year, folks.
So we may not be heading in the right direction. But the interesting thing is, we can barely see behind us the last remnants of the Fort Wilderness mm-hmm. cabins. And there's a service road that goes next to this walking area. But everywhere we look, there is nothing but pine trees, cypress, or cedar. And nature, there's literally butterflies flittering around us as we're walking. There are squirrels, there are lizards. I'm half expecting to see deer at any point. It's really, 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 and it's quiet. Listen.
No, see, that this is the
other thing. Than us yammering on.
Yeah. But again, can you understand why now?
Do you hear the steamboat in the background? Imagine that at 6 a.m.
But can you imagine being, again, the VP who just literally would drive the trucks that he stole and the supplies that he stole. No one was going to find him down here.
That's right. No one's going to come looking for him. It's just like, hey, you got to go look for that VP. And then the deliverance music starts. Here's your banjo. Good luck.
You look pretty. It's like,
okay, but he's all the way over there in the swamp.
That's right.
I've heard stories, Jim. Stories.
Yeah, getting back to Nunes's plans from that period. In fact, fun little side note there. Off of the shopping village and sort of keying off of where the Empress Lily is located,
mm-hmm.
One of the things that Nunes wanted to do during this period was he wanted to build a plantation. Literally, there's a riverboat. So where do riverboats land? They land, next to plantations. And we're going to do this giant restaurant that served elegant Southern cuisine. And then off of that, they were going to do like a moderate New Orleans style hotel, which, again, did eventually get built, just not in that location.
Huh. So what are the plans now for Fort Wilderness? I mean, it's, as a campground, it's successful. It's extremely popular. The other thing that I'm pretty surprised at, they've managed to keep the rates fairly low. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is a moderate resort, but what are the plans going forward for it?
Well, that's I have to use those three dreaded initials, DVC. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I understand. The Disney Vacation Club has a lot of loyal members, and the company loves them.
Yep.
You know, there's just a lot of folks who aren't necessarily members who come to the parks who see a lot of resources being plowed into the DVC that, you know, they think maybe could be put into the parks and that sort of thing, but that's not an issue for today. But the where River Country sits now, going down into the waterfront, that's, you know, being eyeballed for a pretty impressive DVC, one that literally, the gimmick of it is that it will extend out onto the water. You'll have these amazing,
really?
These amazing views of Bay Lake, and you know the, Space Mountain and the castle in the distance. But you and I both are trying to figure out the timeline on this, because, you know, again,
well, they got the written as we're talking about this, they're probably a year out from opening the Grand Floridian DVC.
Mm-hmm.
So late 2013. Rumor is that the Poly is next.
Okay,
after
so,
that,
so it would stand to reason that we're talking about something that at this point is 5 to 10 years out.
Yeah, so I mean, the Poly, if they started it in 2014, mm-hmm. would be 2016 ish.
Yeah,
yeah, so you're right, yeah. So the interesting thing, though, is whether if they continue around the monorail loop, because they will have gone Bay Lake Tower, Grand Floridian, would they go Poly again, or would they do something over here?
Boy, I mean,
because at that point the monorail resorts will have seen construction for pretty much a decade.
Well,
that's a lot.
You know, the other rumor that keeps bubbling up is, of course, in fact, you know, hearkening back to Disney's Westcott. You know, the whole component of Westcott that people within the company were so excited about was Live the Dream. The notion of, you know, you built this, you know, super version of Epcot, but mm-hmm. the notion is the first two floors of that version are, you know, the rides, the attractions, the shop, the restaurant, but the upper three are, you know, are hotel space.
Oh, so you actually stay in the park.
Yep.
It's my dream.
Well, your dream is probably a lot closer than you know, Len, because that's one of the ideas that's being floated for Epcot in regard to DVC, is the notion of building in the international area. In fact, that's supposedly one of the driving components of the next land coming in, is that
A hotel.
Genius. On top of an attraction.
Could you imagine what they would charge for that? Well, it'd be like, you know, like in Disneyland Paris.
Mm-hmm.
So we went there last year.
Yep.
And, I mean, the unofficial guide obviously pays for our research. But even then, mm-hmm. it was like $1,200 a night. I mean, even at that point, as much as to stay at the Disneyland mm-hmm. hotel in Disneyland Paris, there's a limit to even how much I would pay to stay at a Disneyland hotel.
Well, but again, with this being a DVC property, people would buy the points. And, you know, the notion is the number of points that it would
crazy.
Take to stay there, you could, you know, you could get multiple stays elsewhere.
Yeah.
But
still crazy. But that's a great idea, though.
It is, except, you know, okay, you hand this idea off to the operations people.
Right, somebody's got to be there to staff it. There'd be people like me trying to run around,
no,
get on the Inferno barge at Illuminations.
More to the point, you're in this situation where, for example, it means you have to triple pane all of your windows for noise reduction, because face it, you've got pargos going back between, you know, 10 and 8 o'clock in the morning restocking stores, or guys out there with steaming the gum off of the pavement.
Oh, yeah. In the middle of the day, you want to go take a nap, right? So you can't do fireworks.
Well.
Huh, interesting.
So, but anyway, that's bubbling out there, too. So just understand that. And in fact, there was another variation on this idea where they were literally going to take the entrance of Disney's Hollywood Studios, and much the same as the entrance to the Magic Kingdom at Disneyland Paris. That
we'll turn it into a hotel.
Yeah, so
that's actually not a bad idea. Make the hotel the berm.
Well, you know, that actually was kind of interesting, and this is post-dating Magic Underground, but the notion was that they'd start it over the entrance and then extend it over toward Fantasmic. And
okay. Yeah, because that's right now that's sort of a nature area, right? So that is the berm that's separating like the boat dock from the theaters.
So you'd end up with rooms that it would have a killer view of Fantasmic. You could also build a restaurant space there that, you know, would also, you know, offer fine dining and, you know, primo view of Fantasmic. So
interesting.
You know, again, this is Disney looking at its assets in interesting ways. And circling back on Disneyland Paris, in fact, sort of jumping back to, you know, here's Michael Eisner, you know, who constantly was, you know, going back into the files.
Yep.
And, all right, so what can we do that we haven't done? And, you know, he looks at Cypress Point. And more to the point, he looks at Wilderness Junction, and it's like, ooh. Because, of course, they have done, it's not the Santa Fe, which is the hotel at Euro Disney.
Where Cheyenne.
Cheyenne.
And there's a Santa Fe as well.
Okay.
But the Cheyenne is actually looks like a low-budget, Western-themed town. Like, it looks like a mining town.
So, literally, you've done it. You know, it's just the notion of, okay, we built that. And more to the point, they're looking at the huge crowds they're getting in Paris for the Buffalo Bill Wild West show.
Yeah, so I don't know if this is an interesting thing. I think you and I have talked about this before, but maybe not on the podcast, that mm-hmm. Disneyland Paris has an obsession with the American West, the mm-hmm. mythology of the American West. So Big Thunder Mountain mm-hmm. is the most popular ride in Disneyland Paris. Frontierland arguably could be said to be the heart of the park.
Mm-hmm.
Haunted Mansion is there as well, but it's a Boot Hill.
Yep.
Themed attraction. And then Downtown Disney, the most popular dinner stage show is Wild Bill Hickok in Eating American Steak. The other funny thing, too, and you know I've talked about this, mm-hmm. they actually have a Frontierland shooting arcade. And, of course, European gun laws are mm-hmm. much stricter than in the United States. It's funny to see guys in, you know, the French navy-striped blue and white shirts, you know, with their bandanas around their neck, you know, cigarette in one hand, trying to hold a rifle and shoot in the other. It's... I think that's what the French government worries about when they complain about American imperialism in terms of culture.
That's probably very true.
Mon Dieu, the targets, they move, no? It is the battle marvelous.
Well, anyway, so 94, they're looking at taking basically Cheyenne, marrying it to the Buffalo Bill Wild West show,
right,
and basically dropping it here.
In Fort Wilderness.
Literally,
we're still in Fort Wilderness walking, yeah. By the way, guys. We're still walking.
You know, the stretch of woods between the Fort Wilderness campground and where they were going to build Cypress Point. And not only that, but this time, they're going to bring back the railroad, but do it right.
So professional railroad builders.
Yep. Yeah.
Do people still build railroads?
Well, you know, I mean, not those people the same way that they did in the 1880s, you know, just... You can't send, you know, put ads in Chinese newspapers. People kind of frown on that now.
Yeah, but, I mean, I guess there are railroad maintenance workers that you would hire for that, but that's a very specialized skill for which there's, other than Amtrak, probably not much demand.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Huh. But, in fact, I deliberately brought along a book today to show Len, because one of the oversight, or one of the shots I have of, is not only where the Wilderness Lodge Hotel was going to go, but... the train route that was going to stop in midpoint between the hotel, the Grand Hotel, and the campground. And here is, you know, Fort Wilderness Junction. And
so it's supposed to be between the two?
Yep.
Oh, so it can service both hotels.
There you go.
Oh, smart.
So, anyway.
And we're actually walking along the path that is very nearly what the train route would have been.
There you go.
I could use a train right now, Jim.
We're walking off our healthful breakfast.
Yeah, or
whatever that fruit was
of,
that I ate.
Of pastries.
So,
this is a really nice. So there's a nature trail, and then there's a Wilderness Lodge sign. So we're getting there.
2 hours walk that way. All right.
This is really nice.
But so anyway, jumping ahead here. So again, Eisner's looking at the Cypress Point Hotel, which again is relatively modest. It's designed low because, you know, the concern is you're trying to sell the whole national park experience.
Yeah, you can't do a 20-story...
Well, the other thing, frankly, is the higher you get up, the more likely you're going to see the Contemporary, literally across the canal.
Yep.
And, you know, it was hard to pull this illusion off, and this was kind of during Eisner's architect patron period.
Oh, right. Yeah, he was huge into that.
Yeah. And so it was like, you know, you guys have done a nice job here, but I'd like to kind of farm this out to somebody else to see if they could make do something, a bigger statement. So, you know, he puts the idea out to bid. And Peter Dominic, you know, of the Urban Design Group, they land the gig. And it's actually, it's a really appropriate choice because back when Peter was in college, he worked at Disneyland.
Did he really?
Oh, yeah. In fact, it gets better than that. He was stuck in the parking lot. You know, he's the one who would direct your car into, oh, okay, stop, all right, next car.
Really?
So now, just to sort of jump ahead here, he, based on the success of the Wilderness Lodge, they were like, oh, well, can you design the Grand California? It's like, sure, where's that going to be built? The Disneyland parking lot. Like, oh my God, I'm back in the Disneyland parking lot!
His smile momentarily flickers.
Yeah. But that's a great hotel unto itself. Another podcast.
Wow. So. That's, you know, he was singing the Circle of Life in the background as he was designing that thing. That's so hysterical.
So anyway, Peter, Peter really responds to this idea. It's like, oh, this is cool. And, you know, goes out and visits, you know, the great lodges at Yellowstone, yeah, and tries to get a sense of, well, how can we do this? How can we create?
Yeah, because there's a scale that's different in those lodges, and there's
totally.
You know, some of those. I mean, they're actually built with real logs. Some of them are, you know, 150 years old.
That was the thing that you know, Peter went to the Disney and said, "Look, I can do this, but if you want this to be the type of hotel I think you want, you know, we're talking about, you know, a significant investment. I mean, this was a $52 million hotel."
Wow.
And
What was the original budget that did Eisner have something in mind? He wasn't like, okay, well, you got $10 million.
Well, it was much south of that. Well, it'd say 30.
Okay.
But, you know, one of the things that drove up the price point is he wanted real logs. And so they went out. Seriously.
Imagine the size of the hotel, the kinds of trees you would have to cut down. You'd have to essentially buy a redwood forest.
They went out to Montana. They went out to Oregon. It was eventually 85 loads of lodgepole pine that had to be schlepped all the way to Florida.
Wow. 85 truckloads.
Not only that.
And that's just for decoration, because, I mean, most of the hotel is built using modern construction methods.
Oh, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a steel, you know, underpinning and all that. But, again, you're using logs. So it's like you now have to use 300,000 square feet of chinking material too.
Oh, that's right. The stuff that goes between the logs, the sort of the mortar-like substance that goes between the logs to insulate it, right? To keep drafts and bugs and things like that out.
Absolutely.
And actually, chinking in regular log cabin, chinking is one of the largest maintenance items.
Oh, tell me about it. Manasseh and I have a log home in New Hampshire, and, you know, every winter, it's like, I know this cold air coming from somewhere.
Nancy, mix up a batch.
That's it, exactly. You walk around and fill the hole. So
that's funny.
But anyway, so, but Eisner signs off. He says, okay. And so Peter comes up with this really unique design. In fact, we really have timed this podcast well. I mean, we are arriving now at Wilderness Lodge.
All right, so wait. So let's finish up our Fort Wilderness podcast, and we will start right here on the next show.
Okay.
Guys, thanks very much for listening. The next show is going to be all about the Wilderness Lodge. Go ahead and listen. We'd also appreciate you guys giving us feedback on iTunes and suggestions for any other shows. For Jim Hill, this is Len Testa. You've been listening to the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish Podcast. Thanks, and we'll see you on the next show.